This episode of Beyond the Uniform is sponsored by Audible.com, which is offering a free audiobook of your choice to Beyond the Uniform listeners. If you go to beyondtheuniform.io/books, not only will you find a link to get your free audiobook, but you'll also find book recommendations I've had from every single listener on the show. There are so many resources there. And, you know, for myself, I listen to audiobooks when I'm driving, when I'm biking, indoors, not outdoors. When I'm doing my trainer indoors, it is a great way to use what's called net time, no extra time, to learn about something, to get inspired, and to improve your own knowledge database. So check that out at beyondtheuniform.io/books. We're grateful for their sponsorship. Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Siri, and my goal is to help members of the armed forces succeed in their post-military civilian career. I do that by meeting with a variety of veterans to learn about what they do, to highlight all the incredible career options out there available to veterans. We talk about what they do, how they got there, and their advice for other veterans who may want to do the same. Today's episode number 260 with Sarah Ford.
I don't know how great that advice is, but he said, don't even bother with the business plan. Just try to sell 50 pair of boots. And really, the wisdom in that is that if you can sell 50 pair of boots, that means that you've done a lot on the backside, which actually all goes into a business plan. It means that you have some sort of supply chain and some sort of customer way to just try to get out there and start, you know, selling boots, because that means that there's a lot of work that has to be done in order to do that.
Well, first of all, Sarah has graciously provided a 15% discount to Beyond the Uniform listeners for every product on her website at ranchroadboots.com. That's ranchroadboots.com. Just enter the code BTU at checkout and you'll get 15% off all items, including those on clearance. This is an exceptional interview for aspiring entrepreneurs. We talk about how Sarah successfully raised over $28,000 on Kickstarter and her advice for running a crowdfunding campaign. We talk about marketing on Facebook, Google, Amazon, and more. We talk about getting out of your comfort zone and being honest about where the need is for your company's product. We talk about using freelancers to move faster. We talk about how Sarah manages to run and grow a company while also raising two kids, and it's a beautiful look at the importance of having boundaries. We talk about making your company as self-service as possible so that you can focus on meaningful customer interactions, and we talk about if you have that entrepreneurial itch, to do it now and not wait for that MBA or experience or whatever else you think you may need first. As always, at beyondtheuniform.io, you'll find show notes with links to every resource we discuss, as well as relevant episodes if you liked this one. You'll also find information about Beyond the Uniform's coaching program, where we connect you with subsidized career and executive coaches to help you figure out your next career move, whatever that may be. Special thanks to Jason T.A. Jason left us a great review on iTunes. He said, I can't get enough of this podcast and the speakers whom Justin interviews. As a near-retirement eligible active duty service member, I feel there is more unknown than known in my future. BTU has provided me so much insight and understanding in the short weeks that I've been listening. Over the last 7 days, I've probably listened to 10 episodes and can't wait to hear more. Justin, thanks for what you and your smooth jazz voice do for the military community. I do believe that's the second smooth jazz voice reference. Jason, thank you for your review. Thank you to the 105 others of you who have left incredible reviews on iTunes. It means a lot. Really appreciate it. So with that, let's dive in to my conversation with Sarah Ford at Ranch Road Boots. Well, normally in 29 Palms, but today in Houston, Texas, joining me today is Sarah Ford. Sarah, welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
So for listeners, here's a quick rundown on Sarah's background. She is the founder and head honcho at Ranch Road Boots, where her mission is to create leather goods with style and quality that can last forever. Ranch Road Boots donates proceeds from every purchase to the Injured Marines Semper Fi Fund and has a program making boots for amputees. She started out at the University of Texas at Austin and served as an officer in the Marine Corps for 6 years, with time in Iraq, Afghanistan, and 29 Palms. She earned her MBA from Harvard Business School and has worked as a consultant at the Boston Consulting Group, as well as at the startup Local Motors. And Sarah has offered Beyond the Uniform listeners 15% off all items on Ranch Road Boots, including clearance items, and you'll find additional details about that in the show notes for this episode. So Sarah, maybe to start things off, could you take us back to when you were in the Marine Corps and just kind of walk us through your transition to your decision to transition to a civilian career and what that first job search looked like?
Sure. So I joined the Marine Corps in a, it was an interesting time because it was, I was born in 1977 and I joined the Marine Corps in June of 2001. So it was, largely grew up in a mostly peacetime. So I joined the Marine Corps in June, right before September 11th. And then, everything else ensued after that. So we had a very, very busy time while I was on active duty, which wasn't until 2005. I got recalled, but I was married at the time to another Marine officer, and we had done, separately, like two back-to-back deployments each, both to Iraq. And so it didn't there was a lot of stuff I wanted to do outside of the Marine Corps. And so I'd focused on maybe going to business school or going to work for a construction company. At the time, the housing boom was going on, so they were hiring junior officers. And I thought that sounded like fun too. So it was just, it was a pretty busy time while we were on active duty and we weren't together a whole lot. And so it was just, seemed like the natural step was to move on beyond that. I didn't consider it to be like a long-term career for me, and I also didn't really plan on going to business school either. So that kind of came up. I thought I was going to go into some sort of construction management.
And for listeners, if we have time, we'll kind of backtrack to cover Sarah's experience at in consulting and business school. I really want to zoom in on Ranch Road Boots, and particularly for listeners interested in entrepreneurship or maybe interested in the fashion apparel space. But could you start maybe, Sarah, the story with when did this idea come about for Ranch Road Boots? What was the genesis?
Well, Local Motors was the company that I was working at, was essentially crowdsourcing design for automobiles. And Nike at the same time was kind of doing something similar for sneakers. So I had personally purchased two pair of custom boots and really liked the design process. So I was thinking there may be something in that space for making cowboy boots with crowdsourced design.
Was that, do you mean, so like it was like you went to a website and you kind of like through Nike, you customized the boots and then you got them in the mail a couple weeks later?
That was, so Nike did it with sneakers and you could buy people's design. Yeah, and so I was thinking it would be fun if people designed cowboy boots and you had a website where you could design your own or you could buy other people's designs. That was the, like, way, way, way back 2011 version of Ranch Road Boots.
That's awesome. And so at what point did you actually start the company then?
I sent my paperwork in to the state of Texas in January of 2012.
A year from the initial idea to actually saying, okay, I'm going for this.
It was actually probably only about 3 or 4 months.
And was that difficult? I mean, I'm imagining coming from a background in consulting and then at a startup, was it difficult for you to just take that plunge?
Not really. It was a pretty, was a pretty natural step for me. I would say me in a Boston consulting group is a more difficult thing than me in an entrepreneurial setting. Mm-hmm. So I'd gone from more corporate to less corporate with an automotive startup, and then my own company was sort of a natural next step.
And then walk us through, so you kind of incorporate, what does the first couple of months look like? Are you buying leather and starting to manufacture these yourselves? Or like what sort of activities are consuming your life for those first few months when this company is born?
Well, a friend of mine told me, listen, don't even bother with the business plan. I don't know how great that advice is, but... But he said, don't even bother with the business plan. Just try to sell 50 pair of boots. And really, the wisdom in that is that if you can sell 50 pair of boots, that means that you've done a lot on the backside, which actually all goes into a business plan. It means that you have some sort of supply chain and some sort of customer way to, you know, go generate sales. So it's not bad advice. Just try to get out there and start, you know, selling boots, because that means that there's a lot of work that has to be done in order to do that. So that's sort of, those were my marching orders. And that's kind of, that's what I just jumped in doing.
I love that. I mean, that's my bias too, is towards execution. And I think that that's great for listeners, because I think a lot of people who come from the military have tactics and execution in spades. And I always cringe a little bit when I talk to entrepreneurs or aspiring entrepreneurs who are really prettying up a plan rather than just, you know, let's the best validation of an idea is that people are willing to pay for it. And I like what you're saying there. It's like, if you're able to sell the product, that means that everything else is working well. So that's the ultimate test. And it's also, I'm guessing, you know, in a world that's very ambiguous in entrepreneurship, it's a very concrete goal to drive towards, is like, I'm going to sell 50 pairs of boots and do whatever it takes to make that happen.
Exactly. And there was a husband and wife team. I was living in Phoenix at the time. There was a husband and wife team that had a mobile hot dog shop, like a trailer. And she told me, as I was kind of thinking about doing my own business, she told me, well, we've never written a business plan. We really just have a big checklist of to-do items. And so you just go down that list and you're marking things off that you have to get done in order to accomplish the task. Another entrepreneur that kind of weighed in on what she had done. And it takes the sort of the intimidating part of sitting down with this business plan and trying to figure out which business plan is the best one. And I mean, it sort of takes that off the table when you're just like, go, just try to sell 50 pair of boots, go try to sell one hot dog. and the to-do list makes itself almost.
That's great. How long did that take? Do you remember, you know, you start this in, start of 2012, how long did it take to actually sell those first 50 boots?
I don't remember when we hit 50, but I found a boot maker that would make my boots pretty quickly. And then, your first few customers are friends and family. So, you know, maybe your mom and your aunt, like, all buy a pair. In a similar vein, a friend of mine's parents, they're Canadian. They were living in Phoenix for the winter, and that was my first customer. So that was probably within within the first 60 days.
I'm wondering, you know, I think it's also helpful for listeners who are aspiring to start their own company. How long did it take until you were at a point where you were generating enough revenue that you could actually start to pay yourself, or that you could actually, start to take money out of the business? And I just ask to give an example for listeners of just how to prepare financially if they want to start their own company.
Well, it's a timely question. So we're in the middle of fundraising right now for Ranch Road Boots. And I tell people that are going to go start their own business to try to live on like nothing and like save as much cash as they can, because you're always going to need that money for your business. And the more you take out to pay yourself, the less money there is to experiment with say new advertising things that are a little bit risky. So really, I mean, I'm still in that mode where we're putting, you know, I take a small salary. Because the more I take out of the business, the more I'm either going to have to take on in selling equity or debt. So we're still in that mode where we try to run my personal lifestyle like as lean as possible. And your family really has to be on board with that because everybody's sacrificing as part of that. That part can get a little emotionally exhausting if you're not on the same page. And fortunately, my husband is like on the same page and he's active duty. So some, you know, quite a few expenses are taken care of, which is nice, but you really have to run your personal life and your business life as lean as possible so you can keep as much cash in the business as you can till it's on its own two feet, which I would say is probably at a point where you're not having to go borrow money or raise money.
And I imagine it matters even more. I mean, I've had guests on the show who are in like a technology where it's expensive, but you have all sorts of things around inventory and buying materials and then the gap between when you pay for the product and when you get paid for it. So I imagine that finances is really something that you're scrutinizing constantly.
Well, yeah. And it's like, you know, I went from the Marine Corps to business school straight into a few years of working before starting my own business. So it's not like I had this. Yes, I went to business school, but I didn't have like a super strong financial background before starting Ranch Road Boots. So I've had to learn a lot of stuff because even if you hire like a part-time CFO, that's just, again, a drain on your cash flow for the business. So a lot of this stuff, you know, I have a bookkeeper and I have an accountant that works on it once a year, but like a lot of this stuff, like all the projections and everything, I'm just doing on my own. And you really once you start living it, then you really understand it, especially as cash gets scarce, then it becomes even more critical. So it's easy when entrepreneurs go raise a bunch of money to not feel that like heat until you start running out of it. And then you're like, oh my God, because we're so close to succeeding for the next thing, like you have some big thing coming up. And so then you get, then you really, once you feel that once, like you'll never forget it. And you look at cash as just like the most precious commodity on earth.
And just to kind of follow that thread, so you start this in 2012. I'm guessing that it's just kind of like your money or maybe friends and family. And I know that I think in 2015 you did a Kickstarter. Could you just kind of walk through as comfortable as you are sharing, just like how did you finance the different phases of the company, or how did you seek to get money to actually grow?
Yeah, so I was. Unfortunately, got divorced after my first marriage. And so I had no children and I was single and I was just, you know, I was working in Phoenix. And so I was able to save up cash before I started Ranch Road Boots. And I used that money to, and the other thing is I didn't have any debt. So that was helpful too. So I lived like pretty modestly and I had cash. I had my own cash to start the business. Just to prove, you know, talking about the first 50 pair of boots thing, just to prove the concept. Back in that time, I was selling custom boots. So our cash came in, we built the boots, and then we got paid for the second half of the boots. And so from a cash perspective, it didn't take up as much as like nowadays where we have inventory. Then I did Kickstarter because the former owner, he owned Fry Boots in the 1980s. Stanley Kravitz called me and he was like, "Hey kid, I like your story. I think it's really neat what you're doing. I don't think you should do custom. Have you thought about ready to wear?" And Kickstarter it was getting crowded at the time that I launched my first Kickstarter campaign. And if you had told me before I did the Kickstarter campaign, we didn't raise very much. And I didn't really expect to raise a ton, but I expected to raise more. I think we raised like 30,000, something like that, or maybe 35,000. which is not a smashing success on Kickstarter when you're seeing, you know, other companies raise 200,000, 300,000. But keep in mind that the Kickstarter quote shopper isn't necessarily looking for cowboy boots, which is all we were doing back then. So the thing that happened though with Kickstarter was I got a phone call from some guys in Houston, Texas that had seen the campaign. And they said, why don't you come? We're putting on this veterans business battle at Rice University. Why don't you come participate in it? And they had pledged to donate, or not donate, sorry, this is very important. They had pledged to inject $1 million of cash into the winning companies from the veterans business battle. Some of that was debt and it was equity. So it wasn't like a, you know, $50,000, like for free, like here you go. But that Kickstarter campaign, it raised us a little money. It let us put our first little group of boots out. It got a new factory relationship, and it got the eyeballs of who the people that ended up becoming our first main investors.
That's awesome. And for listeners, I'll put in the show notes an interview I just did with Brian Olivier, who talked about crowdfunding, and he actually talks about a crowdfunding campaign that did not work. And so I just want to kind of highlight that I think that Sarah's being a little bit humble here. They set out to raise $15,000 on Kickstarter. They raised twice as much as that. And although you hear about these companies that raise infinity billion dollars on crowdfunding, I think that the norm is probably much more towards people not being able to raise a cent and or not being able to raise enough for their goal. So even what she accomplished there is pretty incredible. Do you have any advice for listeners about fundraising, whether it be crowdfunding or other sources?
Yes. The best time to raise money is when your idea is, there's two great times to raise money. When it's just in the idea stage, or when your business is like doing so great, you don't really even need money. So when you're in the middle of it, it's a much more difficult environment to raise money in. So, I mean, that's what I've learned through this. Like, you can probably raise more faster when it's just the idea stage. Other people may totally disagree and they're like, forget it. Like, that's not true. You have a proof of concept. You already have like a ton of, you know, sweat equity put into the thing. And so now is a good time to raise. But you know, I would argue there's either raise when it's in the idea or raise when you don't even need it, because those are the two easiest times to get it probably.
And again, I asked this thinking of listeners who may be thinking of starting their own business. Can you share kind of how you started to grow your sales, how you started to get people's attention? And I'm interested in hearing your story, but I'm also kind of interested in trying to abstract this out to what others might, plays they might take from you that they could apply to attracting their own audience and attracting their own sales.
Yes. So we've tried a lot of different things, and the thing is, my answer will probably be irrelevant in 6 months, because the money sort of all piles into Facebook, and then the money all piles out of, like, it actually it's still all in Facebook. But but if I say, look, Kickstarter was great in 2012, it's a different environment, right? And on Kickstarter today than it was in 2012. The same thing, advertisers' dollars like all flood into like what's working best, and then it stops working as well. So that's why I'm saying take what I say with a grain of salt. And the other, so we're about to start wholesale, which a lot of people would say, we want to be a digitally native brand. We are. We're selling boots online to people. That's, you know, digitally native. Then the natural next step would be for us to have our own storefront. And so people would send to tell me like, well, why are you doing wholesale? And I have reasons for why I think wholesale is not a terrible idea right now. But and one of them is, it raises brand awareness. So I look at how expensive it is for us to advertise on, you know, basically for the cheapest way to do it, if you don't have that much money, it's Facebook and Google ads. And then we sell a couple of styles on Amazon. So Amazon ads, those are the three places we spend money. Some people would say, you know, print, billboards, you have to have much bigger budgets for those. Some people hate those ideas. So, I mean, it's just, you try a bunch of different stuff and you're probably for the thing you're not, you're probably like, you probably think that's what you should be doing, but somebody that's doing that like hates it and wants to do what you're doing. So you really just have to try like a lot of things, and that can suck up a lot of cash. So going back to that, what do you need cash for? You need it really to experiment with what is the most economical way to build your brand and to get customers in the door.
I think that's such great advice. And what I appreciate about your answer too is I hope listeners take away the dynamic nature of this, of how things are constantly changing and nothing is static. And Sarah is having to constantly evolve and up her strategy and game. And I'm curious, when you first started with Facebook, Google, and Amazon, were there any resources that you found that were helpful in learning about that? Or put another way, how do you stay abreast now of learning about tips and tricks for marketing and tips and tricks for getting the most out of those platforms?
So I waited about a year and a half or 2 years too long to admit that we were an online footwear brand. I wanted so bad to be able to sell boots in little mobile pop-up shop environments where it was like you'd come in, try them on, then we would ship them to you. You'd decide which boots and size fit, and then we'd ship them to you from a warehouse. I wanted that so bad. And I spent like, a year and a half or 2 years working out of these little horse trailers that we converted. We call them boot saloons, to try to sell boots in person to people. And I think I was avoiding having to get good at selling things online because it wasn't like my natural comfort zone. I'm much more comfortable in person and you know, dealing with the person face to face, the customer face to face. And it's really, you know, selling things online, it's a little bit formulaic. Like you could be selling lamps or shoes or whatever. There's a little bit of right now, at least, there's sort of this, a lot of businesses do a very similar thing that are having success selling things online. And I avoided that for too long, getting good at that. Nowadays, and even at the beginning of it, I've always relied on somebody that's a freelancer. You can hire people on Upwork. For example, hiring a freelancer that's really good at that platform to run your ads on that platform, because you can waste a lot of money and you can hire somebody for, say, $500 a month to help be a better steward of your money. It's like a Ferrari, for example, like Google Analytics, for example, or Google. Is like you can get in the Ferrari and drive to the local grocery store, but to really know how to use it to its maximum potential, you have to know what you're doing. And I feel that way about online advertising. And each platform is a little bit different, and they're constantly rolling out changes to it. So if you like that, then great, get good at it. If you don't like that, I think outsourcing it is a good idea, but you have to stay on top of that person, that freelancer, because they're working on 10 other, you know, people's businesses too. So ultimately the responsibility is yours, but that's where we're at with that.
I love so much about what you just said. And one thing that I'll just kind of tease out for listeners is, what you talked about, I've fallen into that trap in my own startups as well. And someone had told it to me this way, and this is the way I think of it, is I fell more in love with my product than I did with my ideal customer. And, you know, I have my own story of spending a year plus going in the wrong direction because I had the way that the product was, I had the way the business was, and that's what I really wanted. And it sounds like it was similar for you. You viewed the business in one way and then realized the bigger opportunity was another way. And I just want to call this out for listeners because I think that that's Sarah's story is more representative than not. And it can be very, very very difficult to recognize those pivots or those transitions that need to happen. And I also just want to point out for listeners, like, it takes an incredible amount of discipline and honesty that Sarah had to display to realize, yes, her passions were in one way, but the opportunity was in another. And for her to be able to make that switch is not easy, especially when, you know, she has birthed this from infancy till now. It can be really difficult to make that transition. And then I also want to dive a little bit deeper of, I love what you're saying about, it sounds like you recognized a skill set was necessary. You also recognize that there is so much to learn, that it is a very deep skill set to know how to run Facebook ads or Google. It's not exactly simple at all. And so you've sought expertise, and it sounds like you paid for it on a site like Upwork. And I'm just kind of curious if you have any advice for people on how to leverage a platform like Upwork to sift through all the noise and find the expertise that you're looking for that's worth paying for.
The platform that you hire someone off of is probably less important. I would get a recommendation from somebody that's already doing this and find out. Somebody told me you have to kiss a few frogs in this business, and it's like you will hire people that you will waste a lot of money with until you get the right person. And so it's better to just get a few recommendations from, if you want to advertise on e-commerce, for example, get the name of somebody that somebody else has been using for some time, and you'll probably save yourself a lot of time and money.
That's great.
And then they work off a lot of different platforms. So whether you hire them through Upwork, and these platforms is a way to find them. It's also it's a good way to pay people, and they handle all the legal part of it. So that's why I'm saying the platform doesn't matter so much. They kind of facilitate the transaction. But I would get the recommendation from somebody else.
That's great. And I literally just yesterday, I use Upwork all the time. I had this spreadsheet I needed to fill out, and I paid someone in India $22, and it saved me probably 5 hours of my life of doing this work that I didn't want to do. So if listeners have interest, we can have a subsequent podcast specifically focused about Upwork. But I love what you're saying, Sarah, about just really using those recommendations to find people and realizing you don't have to do this all on your own. What is your thought?
I did this yesterday. I posted something. There's a thing called Gleam that helps you run competitions with other companies. And I took one look at Gleam's platform, and they probably designed it to where the entrepreneur can set it up on their own. But I was like, oh my God, this thing's got a lot of bells and whistles on it. I would rather pay somebody $40 to set up our first campaign. And that's so that, like, quick things like that, you post a little job description. But if it's a longer term relationship, like your ad manager for Facebook or Google, if you're planning on spending, you know, thousands of dollars on advertising, it's worth like just getting a recommendation for.
It's so funny. I had coffee with another entrepreneur this morning. That was the bulk of our conversation, is how it seems like the market has changed now, where it's like you really need to know what your core competency is as a company and really focus on that. But now there are so many businesses that focus on really teeny tiny problems that, you know, if they have that expertise, use them. Like a site like Gleam, like you're saying, it's like, oh man, why waste the time and money trying to build that or do that on your own? If someone can do it more cost efficiently than you and it's not central to your business, you know, let them do that. And that's one of the many reasons to raise money, is to be able to give you more time and energy to focus where you can have the highest leverage use of your time. Could you just share a little bit with listeners about, you're 7 years in now, it sounds like you're in the midst of or about to raise money. What is your life look like right now? And I love to try to get as granular as possible on this. And if it's today or a day last week or just kind of a fictitious representative day, could you walk us through what your day looks like and the types of things that you're doing? And if you're able to timestamp it as well, I think it helps people realize, you know, what life looks like in your boots.
Yeah. So for me, I have two young children, so that changes some things for other people. But I have a 2-year-old and I have a 5-year-old. So usually wake up around 6:40 in the morning. And is this what you mean, or am I
exactly? No, I love it. I love it, and I think this is great too because I love this detail because so many people listening, I'm sure, have kids or they have other constraints. We're not dealing in a sterile lab. Like there is life going on around you that you have to fit in what you're doing around that. So this is perfect.
Okay, so for me, I was the only person full time at Ranch Road Boots until October of this, like a few months ago. And I've hired people and I've had help and I've had other owners help along the way, but just really full time job, like it's all been me. So I've handled every aspect of the business until then. And I have, so part of that is just staying like alive to fight another day too. You have to, it really is a marathon. So because I have two small children, I can't work like some people, the hours they can work. And also because it's just been me, like I work 24/7, well, not in the middle of the night while I'm sleeping, but literally every like time somebody had a question about boot fit, I was the person they called. So in order to not just get exhausted with that, I do take time out to go work out every day, and I take time to cook dinner and have dinner with my family. And I really try not to do too much stuff like late at night. A lot of people will put their kids to bed, then go back to work. Then that works for them. So for me, it's like wake up at 6:40, get my kids to daycare and then on the school bus. And then I try to clean out, like I look at the schedule for the day and I try to run through all the emails, customer service things, make sure there's nothing like, hey, I put the wrong address. Can you ship these boots to somewhere else? Those kind of things, like those sort of emergency things that needs to get jumped on, like right then. And then it's, I usually work for a couple hours and then I'll go work out. And a lot of times it's like, people make fun of me, but I talk on the phone while I'm running. So I'll call like the
awesome
other guy I work with. I'll call him like while I'm running, or, you know, I have conversations like while I work out too, unless I'm like in some sort of class. And I live in 29 Palms. So I have no commute time. I work in our laundry room in the house. That's where my desk is. And I don't spend a lot of time sitting in traffic, or anything like that. But I, you know, occasionally I'll usually have 1 to 2 hours of meetings a day. And then sometimes days just disappear because you get on a call. Like there's a guy that owns a khaki company in Austin, Texas. I talked to him randomly last week for probably an hour. It was like the best hour phone call because we accomplished a lot, figured out a lot. I learned a lot from what he was doing. And so those kind of conversations pop up pretty frequently, like every day that type of conversation may happen. And then on the production side, dealing with the factory, we're redeveloping our entire line and we're getting ready to launch into wholesale. So right now, from an operations standpoint, it's very, very busy. And that's actually my favorite thing to do. I love doing that stuff. I love the running like the operations part of the business and logistics. So we're trying to redesign boxes, like figure out how to use our boot boxes as shipping boxes. I'm constantly trying to figure out how to make the business as like lean and scalable as possible. So if I can take a human out of a customer interaction and let people do more self-service, then we can spend our time and our money on offering customer service that really matters, that makes a difference. But those are the things that I spend my time, like I'm sitting on my computer, that's the kind of stuff I'm doing. And then I look up and it's like, I may have gone to run for 30 minutes or something. Like I leave my front door, go run for 30 minutes, come back. And then the next thing I know, like I got to run over to the school bus to get my daughter. So between 8 a.m. and like 3:30 p.m., it disappears so fast every day. And I don't take time. I don't eat lunch. I mean, I'll grab like something like super fast, but I'm not a huge lunch person. I'm not a huge breakfast person. I drink like a pot of coffee with half and half in it. And so I have like, I don't spend like any time really like sitting down to eat, like much time to speak of. And I'm just like, that's where I cram in the most part of my work. And then my daughter is, she comes home, she's old enough to play outside or to entertain herself. So until it's about time to go get the 2-year-old, usually I feel guilty if I don't get her by like 5:30 or 6. And then it's like dinner and then, you know, taking care of them. And then sometimes after that, if there's some, like some sort of fire going on or, if, you know, like in the middle of fundraising, a lot of times I will have to go in, but I can't sleep if I look at like, if you get any sort of negative thing happen on your computer, it's really hard for me to get a good night's sleep because I wake up like thinking about it. And so I try not to go check my my phone or my computer if I really don't have the time to sit down and take care of it. Because if I see anything that has to get taken care of, I can't. I have to stop what I'm doing and go take care of it. I'm not very good at separating home and work.
Well, you get a 10 out of 10 on that answer. I think that's so exceptional the way you walked through that. And a couple things I'll just call out for listeners. First of all, I completely relate to that sense of, you know, even if we lose like a $10 customer, it's like it feels like someone's turning a knife. There's just something about when you start your own company that you really want to immediately address a problem. And so I love that self-awareness where you realize that. And so you kind of put boundaries around when you're checking your email so you can actually sleep and get the rest that you need. And I also really love what you were saying about, you know, having 2 kids and these other things, you make time for exercise. And when I met my wife and started my company, I was 20 pounds overweight and just completely out of whack in every area of my life. And it was because I didn't have boundaries like that. I wasn't taking care of myself and was just burning every calorie towards the business. And I think that can work for very, very short bursts, but not for a 7-year run of running your own company, Sarah. So I love how you're calling out for people that may, you know, be seeing versions of startups that are working around the clock and sacrificing everything for it. And I think that Sarah represents a powerful and I think far more effective alternative to that mythology, which is taking care of yourself. And of course, as you heard, she is really packing in her time well, and she's using it efficiently. And it's not like she is on her phone every second. Like, she has time for the things that matter to her. And of course, that brings with it sacrifices. But I just really appreciated how you laid that out, because I think it seems to me as a very realistic, transparent look at one version of what entrepreneurship looks like. And I think that was really helpful.
Well, I didn't mention too. It's like my husband is he has had two deployments with our 2.5-year-old. He's actually been gone like half her life, so a lot of that time was just me. But when he is not deployed, he's like amazing. I mean, I'm in Houston this week. He takes care of everything there. So I do have that resource too while he's there. And then our time together is in, you know, in the morning if he's not at work super early, in the evening like cooking dinner and eating dinner, like that's a really fun time where we can all connect. And then if I can go run with him sometimes during the week, that's like another good time to spend with family, because it's tiring for your whole family if you're an entrepreneur. Like I said, I can't leave work at work. It's hard to. So if I can't sit down and work, then I'm very distracted from my family. And and like fundraising, like what we're going through now is a very stressful time, but I know it's temporary. But you have to recognize there's times in your business where your lifestyle is not sustainable, but it's not forever, and you're making a conscious decision. And that's kind of how I feel about when you're in the fundraising mode. It is really, really stressful, and it's not sustainable for the long term, but you're either going to raise money or you're going to go out of business. So it's not forever.
I love that. I think that's great. What about you went to a top-tier MBA program. You went to one of the top consulting firms. As you look back on that, I'm not not trying to do a revisionist history. I'm just thinking of the person on active duty right now who wants to start a company, and any advice you have on how to consider whether they should go and get that formal education and get some experience first versus getting out and starting something right away.
I don't know if this is a fact, but I think it probably is. If you look at it, I bet most really wealthy, successful entrepreneurs did not go get an MBA. I don't know if that's a fact, but let's just say it. I believe that in my heart, that if you have an idea, and you want to go do it, there's no need to go stop and go get, you know, spend 2 years getting an MBA, and there are a lot of money. And the problem is with an MBA is that if you owe money on it, which the new GI Bill is actually pretty damn good. It was a little bit different when I went through. I was on the old one. But if you have to realize you're going to want to pay that back, and it's going to be very hard to go be an entrepreneur right out of business school. So don't think you have to go to an MBA program. The MBA program provides a lot, and for me, it was absolutely the right path. It's a great fallback too. So if I know I'm highly employable, if I need to go get a job to feed myself and my family, I can go do that. And that is for, I take a lot of, that makes me like have peace. The worst case scenario is that I know I'm highly employable and I can go get a job if I need to. And so that's like, that's a good fallback. But as far as entrepreneurship goes, just getting out there and being scrappy and just doing it and making, that you don't need an MBA for that.
That's great. I love the balanced perspective on that. Well, I always like to keep the last question open-ended. And, I think we covered a lot of ground, and you provided a lot of value around fundraising and marketing and hiring freelancers, and we covered a lot of ground, but I'm sure there's things I didn't ask about, and I'm just would love to make space if there's any final things that you'd like to leave with listeners.
I'm trying to think. Right now, we're really in. I keep talking about it. You mentioned really early on in the interview a tech company versus apparel. I think when you think about starting a business, thinking about like I sell pretty. We provide a lot of value to customers. So our boots, they may pay $350 for, but they would pay like $500 to $650 in stores for the same boot. But that boot is still very expensive to purchase and to keep. Plus, I need size 7 to size 15. So that barrier to entry is footwear is not, you would say it's not necessarily like that high, but it's higher than like if I were going to start a sock business. So consider the complications and the things that you're going to need before you jump out there. The way I started Ranch Road Boots with custom boots was good because it had a pretty low cash need. And now I probably underestimated how complicated footwear actually was compared to like a t-shirt business or a sock business. But from an operations side, it's complicated, and that's what I think I'm pretty good at. I enjoy that it's harder for people to start footwear businesses than say a sock company. I like that the challenge there.
That's great. Well, Sarah, I appreciate your time and advice today. And for listeners, you can find more information at ranchroadboots.com. And like I mentioned at the start of the show, Sarah's graciously offered a 15% discount if you use the code BTU for Beyond the Uniform, BTU at checkout. You'll get that discount, and appreciate your offering that to listeners as well. So check that out at ranchroadboots.com. If you forget, or you're driving or flying a plane or driving a ship as you're listening to this, the show notes will have that information as well. So Sarah, thanks so much for your time today.
Well, thank you so much for listening and for supporting Beyond the Uniform. Beyond the Uniform is produced and edited by me, Justin Asiri. Our staff is entirely part-time. They do this on nights and weekends out of the goodness of their hearts to give back to the military community. Our director of outreach is Steve Bain, who relentlessly books guests, finds sponsors, puts together our newsletter, and thousands of other critical tasks every single week, all behind the scenes to keep Beyond the Uniform running smoothly. Our editor is Kathleen Dillon, who listens to and transcribes every single episode to help out those who don't have the time to listen to the show. It has a major impact on our site's SEO value, which helps people find us through Google. Our data analytics and insights advisor is Andrew Woolridge, who pours over the data each and every month to help us better understand how to best serve the Beyond the Uniform audience. Our digital production work is done by Michael Cummings, who puts together custom artwork for every episode. If you're enjoying Beyond the Uniform, the best way to help us out is by telling your friends and fellow service members and veterans. iTunes reviews, believe it or not, have a big impact on getting the word out as well. So if you have a chance to leave a positive review, that is greatly appreciated. If you know of a business that would like to get their product or service in front of a military audience, we are always on the lookout for sponsors, which helps us subsidize the cost of putting this show together. And if you haven't yet signed up for our newsletter, you can do so at beyonduniform.io. We send out a newsletter twice a month, and it is a treasure trove of helpful information for your civilian career and transition. And be sure to check out our coaching program, where you can be connected with a subsidized, professional, certified executive and career coach to help you in your career decision-making. Thank you for listening, and I'll be back next week with more stories from military veterans about their civilian career. Take care.